Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Crime and Investigations, I Am a Killer is a brand new 10-part true crime documentary series produced in partnership with Netflix by an excellent production team including me, Danny Tipping.
And me, Tom Adams. Each episode tells the story of a prisoner convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death.
In this podcast, we'll be going into the making of each episode, revealing what it was like to produce this incredible series.
My name is Justin Wiley Dickens. I was convicted of capital murder and a robbery homicide, and I received the death penalty.
So, Mockingbird, episode 3, is the story of Justin Dickens, who is a young man who robs a pawnbroker's and in the process of the armed robbery shoots a customer dead is arrested and prosecuted for capital murder.
Well, the jewellery and pawn store that is held up by Dickens is known as the Mockingbird Jewellery and Pawn Store. The mockingbird in nature is a bird that imitates the call of other birds. And I think the feeling was that Dickens, in a way, tried to be someone else holding up that store. He'd been taken under the wing of a chap called Dallas Moore, who was, a criminal. And I think he dealt drugs. He had a criminal past. And it was as if Justin Dickens in this crime was trying to be that kind of character. He wasn't. Well, was he? We don't know. He didn't appear to be the kind of criminal character that Dallas Moore was. And so we felt the Mockingbird sort of summed up the themes of the show.
Again, another story that perhaps isn't as straightforward as it seems, and another example of one that perhaps if we were making a sort of more traditional true crime series and we didn't have access to the perpetrator, the murderer themselves, wouldn't have made it through our selection process, because it's a story of a guy from the wrong side of the tracks, a petty criminal with a drug problem, who robs a pawnbroker's for drug money and accidentally shoots and kills his victim, and he's caught and arrested 24 hours later.
That's the question, whether he shot accidentally or not.
But during during the process of the crime, shoots and kills him. It's definitely him that pulled the trigger. There's no question of his involvement, and it's just a couple of days later caught, arrested and convicted. So it's a very straightforward crime on the face of it, and one that perhaps wouldn't have sustained a 50-minute documentary had we not interviewed Justin. And then over the course of our interview and our subsequent interviews and investigation, it turns out to be a very complex and a multi-layered story, and perhaps not all it seems.
I just thought, I can't believe I just killed somebody. That thought was just on a loop over and over and over on my mind. There wasn't no, am I going to get away with this? Nothing. I was stunned.
The production team had the opportunity in the second interview with Justin Dickens, after they'd interviewed his victim's daughter, to relay that message of forgiveness. And he's genuinely moved by it, and it's a really powerful piece in the film, and brings the story full circle. You know, he's had no communication with the victim's family in the whole time he's been in prison. So this is a rare opportunity.
but the other contributors as well. I mean, Justin Dickens and Dallas Moore's partner ended up taking drugs from Dallas Moore and realised they needed to pay him back. And that's how this whole situation unfolded. But being able to speak to Dallas Moore, being able to speak to his then partner, and in fact the daughter, and the daughter gives an extraordinary interview where she compares her father to a more likeable Charles Manson, which...
That's Dallas Moore's daughter, yes. Yeah, a slightly more likeable Charles Manson, which I think is probably a fairly accurate description of Dallas Moore. There's an interesting story behind that, because we were hoping to interview Dallas Moore, but Dallas Moore's a character with a long criminal record and has spent various periods of his life in and out of police custody and prison, and who had been on the run for a long period of time, and who during the course of our production period was actually arrested in prison, wasn't he, during our production. So we were able to go and interview him in prison, and Dallas Moore is the criminal that Justin Dickens was enthralled to as part of his gang, his crew. Dallas had been off grid and on the run for a long period of time. It's only through luck, I guess, and fortune that he was arrested and imprisoned somewhere where we were able to interview him. So a bit of luck on our part.
I mean, he disagreed with Justin Dickens' take on events. It just goes back to whose truth is the truth. Everyone has a different story to tell.
is a quote from the story. I mean, everybody did have a different take. And it's when these stories are, certainly in terms of the judicial process, it's when these truths come to light and who hears them. And again, that's all we're trying to do in this series, is present all sides of the story, some of which haven't been heard before, and let the audience decide.
Justin Whitey Dickens deserved the sentence he received from the jury. He deserved the death penalty because of the kind of person he was and because of what he did, but also because of the victim that he chose to take from all of us.
So once the guys had written and we'd corresponded over a number of months with them, we started the process of arranging filming dates in Texas and
Florida and Missouri.
And Missouri, the three prison authorities that had granted us access. And this would be the first time we met our contributors. And we had an hour's visiting with each one of them. So we had a lot to do in a very short space of time, having never met these guys. And although they all communicated well and openly on paper, we really had no idea. The teams that we were sending out there had no idea how these guys would react with a camera on them.
They were, obviously, they were key to our films. They were our key contributors, our key interviewees. Now, any other program, when you've got a contributor who is taking up a third or more of the show, quite literally on screen for that length of time, you speak to them, you phone them, you go and visit them, you might even film them, just see what they are like on camera. You make sure you're absolutely 100% sure that that person will work on television, will be able to perform. And we were going in, and then you would interview them for the best part of a day, again and again, asking the questions and getting different versions and just going on and on. We'd never met these people before. We didn't know if they were, it could have just been a distraction for them to string us along. And then,
well, I think also the point is, when you're interviewing people, normally in documentaries, these are people that are interacting with people on a daily basis, having conversations, and perhaps have even given interviews before. These guys have almost no access to anybody ever. They might, if they're lucky, correspond with close friends and family. They have the occasional visitation right. They speak to the prison guards. They're not used to interacting and talking about outside the probably the therapy sessions and the outside the institutional contact they have with strangers. So it was a real leap of faith when the productions team turned up that they'd be able to crack the nut within an hour and get everything they needed in that short period of time.
Equally, it was a leap of faith on their behalf as well, because they didn't know us from Adam, and although we were upfront about what the series was, they had to believe that we would treat their story in a way that they saw fit.
And one of the things, you know, if you've just watched the series, you'll notice that, of course, there is no narration. There's no third-party narrator, voice of God narration, and there is no host or interviewer on camera. And in the past, and on the few series that have had Death Row Access, it's nearly always with a presenter-led interview. And I think one of the things our contributors, what made them more comfortable with contributing was the fact that they weren't going to be interviewed by a presenter and judged and questioned. They were going to be given the opportunity to tell their story. They'd already done, I think several of them actually commented, they'd already done their time in court. They'd already answered, you know, all the questions and had their various interrogations. They were keen to be able to, you know, stare down the lens of the camera and tell their story. And it's that point that we made the decision to not have a narrator and to use the voice of our contributors, the inmates, to lead the film.
Which was challenging because that puts extra pressure on the interviews. You've nowhere else to go. You have to use what people have told you. You can't turn corners with a carefully crafted line of commentary. You have to use what you're given, what you were told. Occasionally, just to get facts across, we've used cards to get across certain points, but for the most part, it is just interviewees telling us their story. And I think that makes it exceptionally real. You feel exceptional. I mean, the other call was to shoot those death row inmate interviews down the lens. So our contributors are looking straight down the lens rather than what often happens in documentaries. They're looking to one side. They're looking to the interviewer who is asking them the questions. We ended up using a mirror box that sits on the front of the camera lens that allows the interviewee to look down the lens, but through a kind of periscope mirror setup, allows them to see the interviewee sitting at the side of the camera. So they can talk to each other. They've still got eye contact. They're still, to a degree, looking face to face, but it gives that down the lens look, which gives an immediacy and it's closer to
an intimacy. Yeah. And I think the choice, that stylistic technique, and the fact there is no narration separating you from the inmate's narrative is what really works in the series. And I think, you know, I wonder even if actually the viewers have noticed there's no narration, you know, on first viewing, because it just carries you along, doesn't it?
And I need him to know that I have forgiven him for what he did. That doesn't mean I like him. That doesn't mean I want to be his pen pal. But for me to go on, I had to forgive him.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And so, during the course of the show, there's two versions of events that unfold, two alternate versions of the story of the crime that was committed. Ultimately, Dickens was convicted of murder, and the case hinged on his intent to kill the victim. Justin's version of events is slightly different, where he suggests it was an unintentional shooting. There was a struggle for the gun during the course of the robbery, and he accidentally killed his victim. He doesn't deny his involvement, of course, but that's quite in law. That's the real key point of whether or not he had intended to commit the crime. And so we look at that from both sides, from the prosecution's case and Justin Dickens' story, and then subsequently other people involved in the case, friends, relatives, witnesses. And again, we can't answer, and we don't answer the question of what actually happened, but we definitely shed light on a case that is not as straightforward, perhaps, as it was originally presented.
Yeah, I mean, we just hear from both sides and allow them each to tell their story. And the prosecution's story differs considerably to Justin Dickens. As with all of these programs. We don't pass judgment. We don't suggest which version. This was again a big thought across the series, that there isn't a single truth, and all we were doing was allowing people to tell their truth, and without passing judgment on that. And that was again one of the reasons not to have commentary across these, because commentary would be that voice of truth. We just present people's truths and let the audience try and work out what they saw as what actually happened. None of these programmes end up with a nice, tidy ending where all the leads have been tied up and we know exactly who's who and what's what. It's like real life. There's a whole tangle of conflicting perspectives and truths and half-truths and misremembered truths, and it was our job to, as it were, present these fairly so that the audience could make their own minds up.
And again, Dickens is a complicated character, but who communicates his side of things very well. He's obviously somebody that is extremely remorseful, I think, for his part in the crime, and he's keen, and exhibited that from the earliest letters, to tell his side of the story, to tell what his version of events, which is something I think he feels he probably didn't have the opportunity to present during his various court hearings and appeals. That's the basis, the spine of the film. But then we also have the opportunity to interview relatives of the victim.
I think the production team did an exceptional job in this film in getting those other contributors to agree to take part. And we were privileged enough to have the daughter of the victim agree to speak to us. And she was very powerful. And made a big impression also on Justin Dickens. The fact that she was able to say to camera that she forgave Dickens, and for us to be able to let Dickens know that. I mean, she's quite open. She says, "I don't want to be his friend. I don't want to meet him." But it enabled her to move on with her life, being able to forgive him, and for him to hear that was quite a moment, I think.
Many responses we had from death row prisoners, a number of them are just adamantly denying their involvement in the crime for which they were convicted. That's not the case with Justin Dickens.
Yeah, I think some of the people we contacted saw this series. You know, there's an awful lot of crime programmes that are looking at miscarriages of justice, and I think there was a hope from some of the people we contacted that this series was doing just that, and it wasn't. It was never the intention. I'm not suggesting this was a miscarriage of justice, but what some characters were looking for was an opportunity to give a voice to say there has been a miscarriage of justice. Justin Dickens was never approached as like that. He just wanted to tell his story. So it wasn't a case that this was ever a campaigning film, and it's not a campaigning film. It's just the story that we've told has, you know, different perspectives.
Well, like the every story in the series, there are a number of versions of the events, of which Justin Dickens is one, and one that he feels he hadn't had the opportunity to tell before.
We'd love to hear what you think of the series. Comment on Facebook or Twitter with hashtag IAmAKiller, and don't forget to rate us and subscribe to this podcast series.
The I'm a Killer podcast is hosted by Tom Adams and Danny Tipping and is produced by Sam Pearson, Steph Nardilli and Matt Talent, with editing by Susanna Lawrence.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
What makes a stalker tick? I'm Ruchira Sharma, inviting you to delve into Anatomy of a Stalker, an original crime and investigation podcast.
That police officer's partner drove to my house to warn me that this man would kill me.
She'd look in the rearview mirror, out from the back seat would up pop the ex-husband.
Don't miss Anatomy of a Stalker. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts. The hunt begins now.